from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American retirement planning needs a makeover. Among those who could save in a 401k, many choose not to or contribute less than they should. Many who do save invest those savings poorly. The 401k put the investment decision-making process in the hands of the American worker. But is it working? Tonight on Point, the trouble with 401ks and what it could mean for your golden years. But we begin in Richmond, Virginia, where the polls have just closed on a day of Democratic presidential primary voting. The state has 82 delegates at stake. Hugh Lessig is a political reporter for the Daily Press in Newport News, Virginia. He joins me tonight from Richmond. Good evening and welcome. Hugh Lessig, what's coming in down there? What's the result look like?
I'll tell you, we don't have any numbers just yet. Obviously, the polls have just closed, but John Kerry is expected to win tonight. He leads in every poll going into tonight. The last poll had staked him to something like a 9 percentage point lead over John Edwards. Wesley Clark was running a clear third, and Howard Dean, who has passed up Virginia, was a distant fourth. So it will be a surprise if someone other than John Kerry wins tonight.
At this hour, I should say, the wires are reporting CNN and AP calling it for Kerry, Edwards second, Clark third, and AP is reporting that John Kerry has claimed victory in Virginia. No surprise in this, you're saying, given the polls in advance of the voting.
No, this wasn't expected to be a night of high drama. Kerry was expected. I suspect once all the numbers come in, it'll show that he did well in Northern Virginia. He has polled well there. Keep in mind that Virginia has something upwards of 127 military installations, nearly 130,000 people in uniform from Norfolk Naval Base to upwards of Northern Virginia. So his military standing cannot be underestimated in a state like this. He did well at rallies in the military community down in Hampton Roads. He was pulling him in as Election Day approached.
Hugh, if John Edwards comes in second here and Wesley Clark in third, what does this say for their Southern appeal, for their claim that they can bring in the Southern vote? What does it do for their staying in the race?
Well, you know, John Edwards, as opposed to South Carolina, which he really staked, you know, it was a must-win state for him. He hasn't said that about Virginia. He hasn't sort of said this is a make-or-break state for me. But it's certainly going to knock down one of the barriers that John Kerry had, which is, you know, Massachusetts Democrat has to prove he can win in the South.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to dilute the strength of Clark and Edwards. You know, Edwards, you know, okay, he won South Carolina. If in fact he is a strong second here, he probably has the resources to continue. But, you know, this is just solidifying Kerry's front-runner status, no doubt about it.
And this was to be a big night, both Edwards and Clark putting a lot on this next step, Tennessee and Virginia. We'll see Tennessee in another hour. But what about Virginia as a bellwether of Southern voting, Hugh? Is this a real marker, or is Virginia so close to Washington, D.C., and that whole kind of, you know, Eastern Seaboard mm-hmm. voting bloc that it's not a good guide to Southern voting more generally?
I'm not sure if it's a good guide to Southern voting generally, but Virginia leans Republican, and I mean lean with a capital L.
Mm-hmm.
They the last time they selected a Democrat in November for president was Lyndon Johnson in 1964. So, you know,
it's been a while.
Yeah. If Virginia is still competitive in the fall, that's a bad sign for President Bush. This state does not go Democratic, which may explain why it was it's a bit of a low key around here. You can drive around Richmond. In fact, I just got back from driving around, and you probably see as many for rent signs as you do candidate signs. I mean, it's just there's not quite that energy in the air that you would normally see with like a general assembly race or a governor's race where everyone's out. So I'm not sure how much of a bellwether it is for Democrats, simply because it's such a conservative state and it leans Republican. I'm not sure how much you can draw from that.
But it is a Southern state. At this hour,
absolutely,
with the polls just closing, we see Kerry on top, Edwards in second, Clark in third, and John Kerry, the senator from Massachusetts, puts a first Southern state in his bag. Hugh Lessig, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Hugh Lessig is political reporter for the Daily Press in Newport News, Virginia. He spoke with me from Richmond, Virginia. Nearly three-fourths of Americans expect that they will have the same standard of living in retirement that they've had in their working years. but few are doing the investing to make that a reality. In the past 20 years, 401ks have replaced traditional pension plans as the dominant retirement vehicle in America, giving employees more control of their retirement saving. This is good, in theory, says our guest tonight, longtime Federal Reserve Officer Alicia Minnell, but not so good as it's turning out in practice. A quarter of employees eligible for 401k plans do not participate at all. Few contribute the maximum amount. The majority fail to diversify their precious retirement investments. The net result, a generation of baby boomers who may fall stunningly short in financing their golden years. Tonight on Point, the truth about 401ks. How's your retirement future looking? Are you saving and investing as you should with your 401k? Do you even know? Has being in the driver's seat of your 401k plan been a boon or a bust for your retirement, your future? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight in the studio is Alicia Minnell, Director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College and co-author of the new book, Coming Up Short, The Challenge of 401k Plans. She was a member of the President's Council of Economic Advisors and Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy in the Clinton administration and a longtime Director of Research at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. Good evening and welcome, Alicia Minnell.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here, Tom.
Well, it's just great to have you with us. And Lord knows, in the back of many Americans' mind, there's this haunting chant, 401k, 401k, how's it doing? How am I doing? Am I ever going to be able to retire? We've just heard a lot of statistics in the introduction to this show. Not a lot of them sound really great. Paint the picture for us, Alicia Minnell. How are Americans doing in driving their own retirement plans via 401k?
As you said, Tom, there's been a major shift in retirement plans from the old-fashioned defined benefit plan to 401k.
Defined benefit, this was our father's Oldsmobile, where you retired
right.
And you had a retirement check that would come every month for the rest of your life.
Right, as a percentage of your final pay. It didn't have anything to do with what happened in the stock market. And those have really been replaced by 401k plans. And 401k plans came of age in the 1980s and 1990s during the time that we had a tremendous run-up in the stock market. Mm-hmm. And so everyone thought they were brilliant investors, and there was great enthusiasm for these plans.
Looked pretty darn good. Looked like a miracle.
It looked great, and we all thought we were very smart. But if you actually look at how much people have in their accounts, they have a fraction of what you would think. I mean, economists have done these simulations to show that if somebody contributed every year from the time they're 30 and mm-hmm. they used reasonable numbers and everything like that, that you're supposed to end up with hundreds of thousands of dollars for the typical individual. But the typical individual approaching retirement has less than $50,000.
Alicia Minnell, run us through some more numbers here, because I know all listeners out there are going to be comparing whatever you say to their own personal circumstances. Give us some, if you can, some
sure.
snapshots at different income levels, at different standards of living. If people want to maintain something reasonable off of that working standard into their retirement, what should they be saving? What should they have in their 401k as they head into retirement?
The common wisdom is that you need somewhere between 65 and 85% of what you had when you were working to maintain your standard of living in retirement.
That's not in the bank. That's the income you'll need off what's saved in your plan.
That's the income you're going to need. And it's less than 100% because your taxes go
sure.
down and your work expenses go down
mm-hmm.
and you can draw on your savings and you don't need to save anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to get some of this from Social Security.
Right.
And I hope we have a little time tonight to
we have
highlight
to because that's in flux itself,
yeah,
and we'll talk about
that. To highlight
that.
What's happening to Social Security. But for the typical person retiring with a history of median earnings, you get about 40% of your pre-retirement earnings now in the form
from
of your
Social Security.
In the form
saying.
Of your Social Security
mm-hmm.
benefit.
That's for the typical person. You mean a median household income, which is what now?
The median earner.
Median
so that's
earner.
Somebody earning probably retires with about $50,000
of salary or income, wages,
yes.
whatever. So about 40% of what they need for retirement will come from Social Security
right.
if they retired it with a $50,000 income. And the rest, as things are now playing out, people are by and large expecting to come from their 401k.
Right, because if you look at – first of all, remember that a lot of people don't have any pension coverage at all.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're discussing this, we're discussing the lucky people, those with some employer-provided pensions.
And by that, you mean even 401k coverage?
They don't have 401ks. They don't have these old-fashioned defined benefit plans. They don't have anything.
So, and this is the working poor. Who's totally uncovered?
At any moment in time – if you look at the private sector workforce, age 20 to 64, so we're getting mm-hmm. the kids out
okay.
of there, less than half the people have pension coverage.
Wow.
If you look at people okay. as they're just go into retirement, the number is higher. because you're looking at households and they've had some coverage over their life. But there's still at least a third of all households are not going to have anything other than Social Security.
Okay, so this is a big chit on the table. We're going to move it to the side, but not ignore it because it's half of households with nothing, you're saying,
at any moment in time.
And a lot of them, as they head to retirement, really not much beyond Social Security itself.
Right.
Okay, so there they sit. We talked with David Shipler last night about the working poor. We've got a sense, and we realize they're not all simply the poor, but that's...
They're not the poor,
But let's look at then those who are trying to gun towards some kind of better retirement with a 401k plan. At that $50,000 income, what should they have saved by the time they retire at age what?
So, I mean, I think that's another issue we should probably put on the table is age what. But most people grab their Social Security benefits at 62. Mm-hmm. And so that's when they're planning to leave the labor force. So if they're getting 40% of their money from Social Security, then they need another 25 or 30% from their employer-provided pension.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the way the numbers are adding up, people are simply not going to get that.
So I don't know if you've got this at the tip of your tongue, but what would they need roughly to have in the 401k account to supplement that Social Security at the time of retirement for this earner who's making $50,000 at the time of retirement? I see you scribbling madly there.
You're going to make
I've got
me
the
mad.
Federal Reserve, madam, on the spot here.
More than they have. How about that?
Okay. Well, put it this way. What do people have compared to what they ought to have, more generally?
I mean, that basically the numbers that you run is that people should have about $300,000.
And this is for that median, roughly
median
for that $50,000 earner.
Yeah, and that would—
For a single person or a couple?
Oh, a couple.
A couple, okay, $300,000.
Let's do a single person, because...
A household, shall we say?
A household.
and as the baby boomers barrel toward retirement, what percentage are going to have $300,000 when they hit retirement?
Very few.
401k? Like a half, a third, a quarter?
The median person has less than $50,000.
Okay.
Does that mean everybody below that has... Even less.
So what is
and
this?
You have to go way up the income scale until you get the $300,000.
What does this mean, Alicia Manil? Are baby boomers going to retire and live in teepees in Oklahoma and eat gruel? I mean, are they going to retire in poverty?
I think that people never fall off a cliff. They always muddle along in some way. But I think a lot of people...
Yeah, but cash is cash, and if you don't have it...
A lot of people are going to get to the time when they thought they could retire, and they're going to count up their piles of assets or their streams of income, and they're going to say, I don't have enough. And they're going to say, maybe I should stay in the labor force a little bit longer, try to stay at my job a little bit longer, maybe get some part-time work to supplement what I have.
Still, at age 62 or 65, if you find you need to save another $250,000... That's not likely to happen.
It's amazing, but working a couple of years longer really helps a lot because it means you don't get reduced Social Security benefits. You put a little bit more money into your savings, and you're trying to finance a shorter period of time because we're basically talking about 20 years of retirement. You take 2 years off that, that's a 10% cut, and that helps a lot.
We've got so much to talk about here tonight. We're going to walk right through it, but I guess the bottom line that I read in your book, Coming Up Short, is that this grand experiment with Americans handling their own retirement savings is coming in with pretty checkered results so far.
Very checkered. Very checkered. We've put all the responsibility on individuals to make a lot of hard decisions, and they make mistakes every step along the way. As you said, 25% of those who could join the plan do not. Less than 10% contribute the maximum. Almost half the people don't diversify their portfolios at all. Nobody tends to change their portfolio allocation as they age, making it less risky. People buy too much in company stock. People tend to cash out their amounts when they move from one job to another. And when they get to retirement, they don't know what to do with a lump sum.
Net result, that retirement may not be there in anything like the form that a lot of Americans are expecting. We're talking tonight with Alicia Manil, co-author of the new book, Coming Up Short, The Challenge of 401k Plans. You can join our conversation tonight. How's your retirement future looking? Is your 401k going to float your boat, or has it gotten away from you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the trouble with 401ks, why Americans' premier retirement plan isn't working for most Americans. My guest tonight is Alicia Monell. She's co-author of the new book, Coming Up Short, The Challenge of 401k Plans. She's director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. She's been around the track. She's looked closely and said, we've got a problem here. You can join our conversation tonight. Are you saving in your 401k? Are you saving the maximum? Are you saving 10 to 15% of your income? Or does that sound like an impossible dream? And if you are saving in a 401k, how's the nest egg doing? Did you get whacked when the bubble burst? Have you recovered? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I should say, as an aside, throughout this evening, we will be following the results of Democratic presidential primary voting today in Virginia and Tennessee. Polls closed at the top of this hour in Virginia, and the latest results, early results, but it's been called for John Kerry. And with just a few precincts in, we're seeing John Kerry with 47% of the vote, John Edwards with 29%, and Wesley Clark with 11%. We'll have more on that as the evening unfolds. Alicia Monell, what was expected when 401k sort of emerged as the big, prominent retirement vehicle? What was the thinking? What was the expectation? How does the picture that we see in fact today compare with what was projected, anticipated?
I think they actually emerged with very little thought, very little debate, very little discussion. They appeared in the early 1980s at a time where the old-fashioned plans that we were talking about suddenly became increasingly expensive because we had major pension legislation in 1974, Employee Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA. And so you had two forces in move. One, the pull of the 401k. Employees liked it because they liked their own account. They liked the ability to control. Employers liked it because they got rid of the all the risk associated with investments. They didn't have to worry about providing annuities at retirement.
They no longer have a long-term obligation to their retirees.
They don't. They don't have to worry during the build-up phase, and they really don't have to worry during the payout phase. And when you were talking about people getting hit by the collapse of the stock market, the other thing to remember is we've also had a period of very low interest rates. So people who were thinking they were going to retire and whatever they had in their, how big their pile was, they're not going to earn very much on it with these very low rates of return.
So when the market's not giving to you and the interest rates aren't
it's
either.
It's a double whammy, yeah.
But so you're saying there wasn't even a big vision, and yet we heard a lot, and we still hear it in the Social Security debate, celebrating the capacity of Americans to save and invest their own money for their own retirement, that this would be liberating and that this would let people outperform what the old-fashioned vehicles had provided, the defined benefit pensions, Social Security itself. Is that proving out here?
No, it's not. But I don't think we want to characterize the average American family as incapable of doing this. These are very hard decisions. And if I were queen, I would not want people to give up coaching Little League, reading books, going to their church or synagogue, whatever, and staying home to become a financial expert. These are hard decisions, and it doesn't seem like a good use of people's time. And people have not been able to put the time in it and come to the decisions that will provide them with the nest egg they need.
Which means down the road trouble. Is this recognized at this point? Because we don't see Social Security making up the difference. In fact, if anything, we're talking about benefits there going away and talking about that just in the last couple of days, are we not?
Well, there are two aspects of it. One is just what's going to happen to Social Security under current law. And under current law, for people retiring at 62 or 65, the amount you get is going to go down relative to your earnings because already in place is a process whereby we're going to extend the age at which you get full benefits. You used to be able to retire at 65.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost 66 now.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to stay at 66 for a while, and then it's going to go to 67. When you increase the retirement age like that, that's a benefit cut. The second thing is, many people don't know this, but their premium for part of Medicare is deducted from their Social Security check before it goes in the mail.
And those premiums are going up.
They used to be a small part of the Social Security benefit. They're going to be a very big part of the Social Security benefit, and they come out. And then under our personal income tax, you get taxed on Social Security if your income is over a certain threshold. Well, those thresholds don't go up for inflation or wages or anything, so pretty soon more and more people are going to be paying taxes. So that's without talking about the financing problem. Then you talk about the financing problem. We should close that gap. We've promised more in benefits than we have scheduled
impact. We're paying for Social Security out of current dollars.
That's right. It's primarily a pay-as-you-go system. There's a trust fund there, but it's not that big.
And it doesn't add up as the boomers retire. President Bush is making some proposals about what to do on this front.
The Social Security system is running a deficit. If you're running a deficit, you can close that gap in two ways. You can pay out less, or you can bring in more money. There's nothing like privatizing that's going to solve the problem. Now, you can bring
in... President Bush says private investing is likely to get a greater return than Social Security has.
It is, but these accounts are a relatively small portion of the total system. The return, it may help a little bit, but it's not going to close the gap. Moreover, the proposal that was described in the economic report of the president, it does two things, and in two stages. First, it cuts benefits over the next 75 years, enough to eliminate the deficit. So before they even start talking about individual accounts, they have solved the financing problem by cutting benefits.
But it's supposed to cost $1.25 trillion over 10 years.
Two-stage. First, they cut benefits so that there's no gap left. And then in this reduced program, they say, let's take some of that money and have people put it in individual accounts. And because this money is going out of the program, this new, smaller program,
yeah,
they need to borrow some to pay benefits to people who are currently in retirement.
So this is the so-called retirement savings accounts. All this brings us back around to the 401k because, as the picture, as you painted here, makes them critically important.
There's a real I didn't know what was going to come out from looking closely at 401ks because there's great enthusiasm for them, and people like them.
Sure.
People like them.
Well, it's nice to have a nest egg if you can put it together.
Yeah. And so I didn't start out with a negative attitude towards them, but I really am convinced now that people make enough mistakes along the way that they're just not going to end up with the money they need. And the worst mistake that people make is, and I've done this myself, and paid the extra taxes, is that when you move from job to job,
which people do often these
days, you take out that money and you spend it. Or when you really need a new car, you take out that money, you pay the 10% penalty tax, and you buy what you have to buy because people are under a lot of financial pressure, and that's the only pile they have to turn to.
So is it that simple? Is that why people don't participate more fully in 401ks? Why don't people, save 8% of their 7, 5, 4, 8, 9, 10% they recommend of their income, or the max if they're maxing out? Is it just because the budget pressures, the household budget,
people
are too great?
People are under budget pressures. It seems sort of scary and complicated. They have conducted some very interesting experiments. Instead of asking people in some companies to join the plan, they've changed the presumption and had automatic enrollment. And they say, all right, you're in the plan unless you go to the personnel department and tell them you want to be out.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, instead of having 75% of people participating, they have 95% of people participating. So it's a hard, complicated decision. People sort of resist taking on such a big challenge. But if you put them in, they'll stay in.
You've got some more things that you describe as solutions, ways of getting more people participating more fully in the 401k plan. Listeners, you can join us tonight. What retirement standard of living are you headed for comfort, thrift shop, poverty? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Phil is calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
Thank you. I think that the first big mistake is probably not saving, it's rather incurring credit card debt, because the average American has a couple $1,000 of credit card debt. They're paying 19-20% a year, and their return on investment is probably going to be far less than that.
So that's what you call the opposite of saving.
Basically, yeah. So that's sort of a question statement. And the other, I guess this is a question, relates to home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that factor in with more and more Americans owning their own homes? How does that factor in later on when they retire, both either as an asset or when, say, they're not paying mortgage payments?
Right.
How does that impact their ability to live comfortably in retirement? I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay, both great points, Phil. Thanks for raising them. First, credit card debt and how that gets in the way of saving. And secondly, this issue of home ownership.
It's
I know a lot
important.
Of people are thinking, well, you know, I'll sell my house and I'll move somewhere cheaper and I'll be okay.
Both of those points are really good. Yeah, credit card debt is just a menace. And so, I mean, if that's really your alternative, you're probably better off keeping that under control and saving a little bit less.
Get those cards paid off and cut them up rather than putting in a 401k?
I think so. Rather than paying 20% interest, yeah. I think that's just a scary thing. I think the homeowner...
A painful decision and perpetually,
a perpetual trap. Yes. No, that's the thing. You keep
run it up, pay it off, run it up, pay it off, and never save.
And then you don't start saving until you're about 45 or 50.
Yeah.
And then it's just too hard. Mm-hmm. You've got too little time. I think the homeownership issue is really interesting. That's one of the reasons why you don't need 100% of your pre-retirement earnings to maintain your standard of living. Most people have paid off their mortgage.
So the mortgage goes away. What about the home itself as
home
a bucket of equity that you can cash out?
It is a bucket of equity for many people. There have been a lot of attempts to try to figure out how to get people access to this equity, and through reverse mortgages, where you essentially get a loan from the bank and then promise the bank the home when you die or sell the house.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that there's a lot of resistance to it. People have spent their whole life paying off their mortgage.
Yeah.
They're so happy to have it gone. They care about their home.
Mm-hmm.
They also see it as something that they're going to leave to their children.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more than just a bucket of equity. It's got a lot of emotional value. So Phil's absolutely right. There's a lot of value there, but it's not clear how we're all going to tap into it.
That it's going to flow in. And if the baby boom all decides to tap into that at once, does that create if it hasn't already burst, does that prick the housing bubble?
I think you've been reading all the economic papers. There's been a lot of papers on this issue of implosion. What's going to happen when the baby boom sells its houses and its stock? Its stock, you know it's coming, and there's a world market for
mm-hmm.
this kind of stuff. Homeownership, I wouldn't be surprised if prices decline when the baby booms start selling their
homes.
So
it may not be the equity bucket full of equity that people think.
Well, they've gone way up,
yeah.
Right? And so
But some of the froth may not be there.
Yes, some of the froth
anyway.
May not be.
Jim is calling from Chester, New Hampshire. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I've had a 401k for about 20 years, and I've maxed it out the entire time that I've had it.
You're the model citizen, Jim.
Well, thanks to my wife. My question is, I expect, the 401k is a wonderful vehicle because you're going to retire at a lower tax bracket.
Yep.
And I expect that we probably are going to be means tested as the baby boomers start to retire as far as Social Security is concerned. So I'm not sure that we're going to see all of our projections that we get from the government each
right.
year.
Right.
My question would be, I would, frankly, I'd put a lot more into a 401k if I were able to. Does Alicia know if there are any plans? Right now, I think it increases at $500 a year or something. But is there any talk of substantially increasing a person's contribution to 401k?
Jim, we've got it, and we'll take it. We're going to let you go. Your phone's a little rough, but we've got the question. Alicia Minnell.
As you said, those limits are going up automatically, but by small amounts. The president has on the table for people like you, Jim, but you are the exception. Can afford to and have done a good thing, have maxed out new lifetime savings accounts and retirement savings accounts that would allow people to put in a lot of additional money.
In addition to
their 401k.
How much additional, Alicia Minnell? Just the $5,000 a year?
For a family of four could put away, yes. But many 5,000. So a family of four could put away $30,000 a year.
That is, a family of four could put away $30,000, so more than $5,000 ahead in it.
Yeah, because basically lifetime savings, you get one for yourself, your spouse, and each
mm-hmm.
child, and the
mm-hmm.
retirement saving $500
on
each.
On top of that. Oh, so that would crank it way up.
But Jim is the exception. That this is Jim, as nice as he sounds, he's not the person for whom we should be designing our retirement income.
So for those
system.
Who can and do save at that level, the ship comes in. I mean, this is a great opportunity. But what you're saying is, as social policy, most people are not likely to be able to or to take advantage of it.
Yeah, less than 10% of the people in 401ks are at the max. Less than 7% are maxing out on their IRAs. I don't know about Jim's income level, but he also has a Roth IRA. Option there.
So there's all kinds of private options available and more coming. But your point
is... I'm not sure if these additional savings accounts are coming or not. I mean, I think that...
President Bush is pushing for them.
The president is. My concern with them is it allows a family of four to save $30,000 on its own. And if the head of that family is also the owner of a small or medium-sized business,
yeah.
my concern is he or she is going to say, well, I can save $30,000 by myself. I don't need to set up a pension plan for my employees. I'm all set.
So this
I'm
is another kind
if
of
you,
gift
if,
to the rich, or the Democratic candidates
these,
would paint it that way.
These very generous individual options, that it's going to discourage pension coverage even more. And as we started to say earlier in the program, that at any moment in time, half the people don't have anything.
So there we're talking about yet another facet of American life where the difference between those retiring well and the average retiree will be vast.
It is going to be vast.
Well, Richard is calling from Middleton, Massachusetts. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hi, folks. I guess I'm proud to be, I guess, one of the folks who are in the minority. But I can see, I mean, personally, I have a well-diversified portfolio. I've recently taken money out of my 401k as an in-service transfer and put it into my rollover IRAs because I have better software tools available from my broker to manage my money there.
Richard, you sound like a pro.
A poster child.
good on you. So,
I've also been able to put away, you know, the 15% the last couple of years. My wife doesn't work. But, you know, I think going back to Bob's point, my wife and I have made decisions where, you know, that allow us to do that. We're less influenced by the commercials on television to buy everything and to own a five-bedroom home when we have two children and drive two large SUVs. You know, we have 529 plans for each of my children. We have I invest in my Roth IRAs for myself and my wife.
Wow, you've done it all, my friend. You've made it a priority right across the board.
I'm very jealous.
Absolutely. But I mean, I did spend time when I first started working where I remember at my first employer, they had like three choices. One was a guaranteed investment account and the other was S&P 500 index. And I didn't know what S&P 500 was. And it was very intimidating. And it did take a lot of work on my part. And I mean, where I work, my employer matches 6% of the dollar for dollar, the first 6%. So, I mean, I get a lot of bonus money on top of that.
Well, Richard, we've got the picture and our time is short before the break. So I'm going to take that fabulous ideal picture that you represent there and put it to Alicia Manel. And thank you for your call. If the framers had an ideal picture in mind, this sounds like it.
It was Richard.
It was Richard, taking advantage of every tax advantage opportunity right across the board, and good on him. And yet what we're finding here is the fallibility of human nature, maybe the pressures, the real pressures of the economy on many people. They just don't or can't do this.
And the numbers we have on how much money people have in these plans are really good. They're not.
You mean they're solid? You're not guessing
really
here.
They're really solid. They're very carefully done surveys.
But they're not good in their volume. They're low. They're not the Richard
profile.
They're
accurate. They're not good.
They're accurate and they're generally almost pitiful. We're talking tonight about the trouble with 401ks, why Americans' premier retirement plan is not working for most Americans. Is the 401k approach just too complicated and fallible for most Americans? For you, we're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the trouble with 401ks. My guest is Alicia Manel. She was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy. She's co-author of the new book, Coming Up Short, The Challenge of 401k Plans. We've been hearing from some model citizens tonight who have used 401ks to their absolute maximum benefit. But the numbers show us that after all these years, two decades now with 401ks, most Americans are not doing what they need to do to come close to their retirement goals. What do you think? You can join our conversation tonight. How is your retirement future looking? Are you doing a good job as your own retirement manager? And how would you change the 401k program to up the odds of it working for more people, for you? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And again, just as an aside, we are following tonight Democratic presidential primary results in Virginia and Tennessee. Tennessee coming up at the top of this hour. Virginia polls closed just half an hour, 40 minutes ago now. And we see at this hour, with 23% of precincts reporting, John Kerry first place with 50%. John Edwards second with 28%. Wesley Clark with 11%. Dean 5%. Sharpton 4%. So John Kerry wins a southern state tonight. More on that later. Tom is calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Over the last few years, there's obviously been an economic downturn. A lot of people went through career transitions, myself being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I had to draw from my 401k, and it just irks me to death that the government penalizes you in a situation where you have to draw to meet your expenses. They penalize you 10%. That's in addition to the income tax that you have to pay on withdrawing prematurely from a 401.
Right, so you saved it. It was your money in the 401k, and when you needed it in an emergency beyond the income tax, you got penalized.
Exactly, and I'm not the only one. I've called senators, I've called the IRS, and they sympathize with you, but nothing is getting done.
But, Tom, as a matter of social policy, what do you suggest here? I mean, if it's available any time at no penalty, don't you need some speed bump to keep people from reaching in there to go to Cancun or buy a new motorboat?
Well, I mean, understanding you have to pay the taxes, that's one thing. Under duress, to be penalized, I mean,
yeah.
Ultimately, there
yeah.
are some people that had to exhaust their 401k, so what, in the end, the government's going to pay out anyhow.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom, it's a good point. Thanks for sharing that, and we're sorry you had to do that. But I'm sure, as you say, you were not alone. Alicia Minnell, in the old defined benefit, there was no way to
access.
You had
no access to
that,
it.
That when the company was accruing your pension plan, it wouldn't have been available in any case. Of course, on the other hand, you might not have invested. You might never have seen anything if you got laid off in hard times.
That's true. I must say I have done what Tom has done. I'm not proud of it, but I paid that 10% penalty. But you come down to a point where your car just collapses and you just need that money and you take it out and you pay. But I think you used the right phrase, bump in the road, because if you didn't have that penalty, people would be taking their money out much more than they already are. And that's the big problem. It's not that people aren't putting it in, because when we saw these low balances, we couldn't figure out what it was. And so we thought, well, okay, some people who say they're participating, they're not putting in
mm-hmm.
in the money. But you look at the contribution rates, they're pretty much across the board that everybody's in is contributing.
Mm-hmm.
It really is taking this money out is where the...
And most commonly paying the 10% or taking it out when they change jobs and it becomes available.
And no, you pay the 10%.
Even then?
Yes.
Wow. So people taking it anyway for the car, for the down payment on a house, for college education, who knows what.
Yeah.
But that means it won't be there at retirement.
Right.
Alicia Minnell, let me ask you about how Americans treat their 401ks by age. I don't know if you have a breakdown here, but it occurred to me thinking about the show tonight that for boomers who kind of grew up in a world of defined benefit pensions and who saw their parents, come up to retirement and the company pension was there. And they kind of imagined that whenever you have a shifting of gears like this, it takes a long time for people to really get used to it. I remember 10, 15 years ago, people didn't take 401ks very seriously. They were kind of a marginal thing. Some people were saying it's a great thing. You've got to be involved. But a lot of people weren't even thinking about it yet. Are younger Americans taking it more seriously earlier, doing the saving that they ought to be doing at an early age? Because on the other hand, their incomes are not high, so it must be tough for them.
No, I think that's right. I mean, one comment you could make is you could say to me, well, when you tell me people just before retirement don't have that much in their 401k, you could say, well, a lot of that generation was covered by a defined benefit plan. And that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at people in their 40s and they only have a fraction, a third of what a simulation would show that they should have. And you look at people in their 30s and they still have less in their 401k than what you would figure they would have had if they'd been contributing regularly and keeping their money in there. So you do see this shortfall every step along the way. Now, people may wise up when they realize that they're not going to have anything else if they don't contribute to this 401k. And we may see different patterns over time. But right now, you just don't see a lot of money in these
plans. What should they do if they wise up? Okay, here's an American in his or her 40s.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, they have one-third of what they ought to have in their
mm-hmm.
401k. Well, there's a limit on the 401k. It's not like you can just make it all up in one lump sum, even if you had the cash.
Right.
So put on your financial planner hat here. If you're 40-something, you've got a third of what you should have in your 401k. There's a limit to what you can put in there every year. What ought people do if they could somehow pull it off?
I mean, you should contribute the max, but what you've done is...
But that's already built into the model.
Yes, but most people are... Only 10% of people now are contributing the max.
Okay, so max up, that's one thing.
Most people can increase their contributions a lot. They could start saving through a Roth IRA or a regular
mm-hmm.
IRA if they meet the income limits. But it's so hard if you're waiting till you're in your 40s, because even if you put aside the same amount as if you had started at 30,
mm-hmm.
you've lost out on all those years of interest, and it's almost impossible to make it up. So that I think that's the pattern. We all start saving seriously sort of after our kids are grown and we've kind of got them through college. That's the first time we can really turn to our retirement. And by then, it just requires such massive amounts.
Randy's on the line. Hi, Randy. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Didn't Einstein say the most powerful force in the universe is compounding interest?
Yeah, right.
Right. Move over black holes.
Yeah, right.
I wanted to call and comment on the fact that my wife and I are both architects, and in our 20s, I'm 33 years old.
Okay.
We have a child. In our 20s, it was easy. We contributed the maximum available with our employers. They made it very easy to contribute to the 401k, but now we have a house. We had to find a good school system, so the house is incredibly expensive.
Yep.
We have, you know, $1,000 a month daycare on two architect salaries. 401k is easy to do, but we don't have any money to put into it.
Right.
So it sits there. Are you contributing at all now, Randy, or a fraction of what you did?
A fraction, you know, a couple percent. I mean, I just couldn't stand not to do it, but, you know, we're running a deficit, so... and that's the problem. We have to run a deficit in order to make it work. And, you know, we made this investment in the community in Cohasset for, you know, assuming our incomes come up later on in life.
But then, for the schools, for the community there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Alicia, Randy, hang on. Alicia, now, what's your advice here? I mean, is Randy just living too large? He should move to a less expensive community? Because... to pull off what he feels he's needed to do for his family has meant he's now becoming one of those people who's not maximizing their 401k.
No, he is in a very typical position, just a whole lot of pressures, wanting the best for your children, the housing in districts that have good schools is very expensive. And so you make these choices. And so
we don't feel as if we're being frivolous.
I mean, I don't think you are.
I'm sure many people relate and wouldn't feel you were frivolous either, Randy. But the thing is, Alicia, as you describe it, they and many others are making a trade-off here. And the bill comes due at retirement time.
Yeah, I certainly hope I don't come across as critical because this is really hard to do. And this has put a lot of pressure on individual families, and they've got so many other financial claims.
But never mind throwing stones or passing judgment. Yeah. You're just saying it's a reality.
And it's a reality.
At the other end of the line, the cash won't be there.
Randy's highly educated, cares about all the right things, and he's not paying into his 401k. And that's the problem.
Randy, good luck. You're right there with a whole lot of people, and since you started in your 20s using it, better off than many. Alicia, what about this issue of how people invest the money that they have saved in their 401k? I mean, I have friends who are just paralyzed by this challenge. They got whipsawed when the bubble burst, and now they've got money sitting, you know, in cash or here. They don't know what to do with it. They don't even want to look at it because they feel paralyzed.
Basically, what happened during the 1980s and 1990s, you put money in, people put a lot of it in stocks, the stock market went up, we all sat there at cocktail parties patting ourselves on the back saying how smart we were. None of us, as we were getting older, decided, well, maybe we should move a little bit out of stocks and into something a little safer.
The party was too much fun.
And a lot of people approaching retirement had enormous amount in equities, and the market collapsed. And you saw a really amazing phenomena because that also coincided with a recession. In a recession, the percent of the population that's in the labor force that is working usually goes down.
Yeah.
And it did this time for every age group except those 55 to 64.
Meaning?
And suddenly, an increasing percentage of those started working. And these were the people who got hit so hard in their 401k that they either said, I was planning to retire but can't, or either they had just retired and decided to come back in and get some other job.
Because they managed their way into a hole. And again, I mean, it was a market collapse. And so it was
a market collapse. But if we had all been smart, we would realize that we were no longer in our 20s or 30s. And we would have reduced the share of our 401ks that were in stocks. And none of us did that.
Now there are new services emerging where you can pay to have your 401k managed by a professional manager. Is this the answer?
I think that setting the defaults, setting what happens automatically to a smart place on the dial is the way to go.
So you're really upstream of what I'm talking. I'm talking about for people who have savings mm-hmm. and don't know how to manage it in the market. They can now go out with Fidelity and lots of others and pay something to have that money managed for them. You're saying it's got to be fixed upstream from that. When you say set defaults, run us through your package of solutions here again.
Well, as I view it, it's the 401k issue is a series of decisions that people have to make. They have very little guidance. They don't have a lot of other aspects of their lives where decisions of this nature come up. So my proposal or our proposal in the book is to really build on inertia. That is that people tend to stay where they're put and sort of following on this notion of automatic enrollment. So people would be in instead of out.
Automatically. Unless they opt out. And they're likely to stay in at some level.
They're absolutely likely to stay in. And cases where they've used this automatic enrollment, 95% of people are in the plan.
Okay, so that's fairly easy if it were legislated to get people in here. And few people would probably object to that, not many. But then what?
And these are, just to clarify, these are defaults. These defaults means that if you don't like it, you can go and get yourself out.
Opt out of any step. Yeah. Okay, next step.
So then if you're 30 years old, you would be put 70% in stock and 30% in bonds.
So they'd not only get you in, but there'd be a default setting for your investment
profile.
How
risky
profile.
It should be. Mm-hmm. And then as you age, the 70% would go down to 69, 68, 67, and keep going down.
Which, as you point out, people are not doing on their own.
None of us do that.
They stayed exposed to that stock
all
exposure in the 90s.
All stay exposed to stocks. And then in terms of rollovers, it'd be automatically rolled over into an IRA, so it'd make it harder to get at when you change jobs. That people, we haven't talked about this, but people have much too much in company stock.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
somehow we would
we saw
have
and others get whacked
yes, some
on that front.
Automatic way to reduce that over time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we haven't talked about this at all. What do people do when they get to retirement? And somebody hands them a check for $50,000.
Or $300,000 or $500,000, whatever they've
yes,
saved.
Yes, we wish.
But it comes in a lump sum.
Yeah, but it comes
unlike
in a lump
Social
sum.
Unlike Social Security and
or
pensions.
The old-fashioned pensions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that means that people face two risks. One, they can just kind of live off the interest and sort of really squeeze down their budgets more than they had to.
Mm-hmm.
Or
for fear of spending it
yeah,
too quickly.
Yeah, because they're afraid of outliving their resources. Or they can blow it on trips around the world or mm-hmm. do it, something frivolous, in which case them and then their spouse
are in trouble. What's the alternative to those?
Are some sort of annuities. But people hate annuities.
That
annuities
is, you take
are,
your lump sum, you put it in an annuity that will pay you a fixed...
you take your $100,000, you give it to the insurance company, and the insurance company says, I will pay you $8,000 a year for
Why
as long as you...
Why do people hate
it.
That? They want the flexibility?
I don't think... Yeah, they,
it's my money.
It's my money. They don't like insurance companies. They view it as a bet with the insurance companies that if they live, that's fine. But
right.
they die, the insurance company wins. And
right.
in point of fact, that's not how they work. The money goes to those who live along
so,
in your group.
So it's a good idea. Alicia Minow, we are so glad you're out there banging the drum on this. It is a very personal and very real issue for almost all Americans. We're glad you've looked into it so thoughtfully and thoroughly. And thank you so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure, Tom.
Alicia Minow, co-author of the new book, Coming Up Short, The Challenge of 401k Plans. She's director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.